Good morning, friends. It's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, ably assisted by Terry Wilson, engineering the control panel over here. And I'm happy to have with us today Neil Main from South County, and we're going to talk about estuaries, and there's some estuary programs coming up and estuary awareness, and particularly specific to the Nequanicum River Estuary. Neil, thanks for being with us here today.
My pleasure, Jim.
Give me a little biographical sketch of Neil Main.
Well, I've been hanging around, actually, that estuary for a long time. We used to actually have a little club when I was a 10, 11-year-old stage of my life. And you had to wade out during high water into the flats of the estuary and catch a flounder. And you had to do that by stepping on it. But, of course, when you started, every time you stepped on one, you jumped back. And so it took a while for people to kind of... So our little, 10-year-old boys club got started in the estuary with sort of getting control of things enough that when you stepped on a flounder, then you'd reach down and grab it, hold it up, and say, I'm in. I'm in the club. I just caught a flounder.
And then would you eat the flounder?
No, we'd turn them loose. And so that was, like I say, it was just a little ritual, young boys are. So anyway, that was the start. And I ended up going to school in Seaside and graduated from Seaside High School. Went off to college for 4 years, become a teacher, come back to Seaside High School. There 31 years teaching science and marine biology.
Where'd you go to college?
Went to Linfield College.
Oh,
and then did a fellowship grant down at Humboldt State in marine science. So that really got me going on just what an incredible resource the estuary could be, given it's 20 seconds away from my classroom across the street from Seaside High School. So it just seemed like too good a resource to pass up. So, yeah, become kind of a rare day. We were in the classroom, and the classroom got moved out into the estuary.
What is the working definition of an estuary?
Well, there's a couple different kinds. Some which have a flow of fresh water from a watershed. And then there's sort of the embayment kind, where you just really flood water into a large bay of some kind. And response to the tides. But we've simplified it to say, it's where, it's that interface between the land and the ocean. And low tide, it's land. High tide, it's the ocean.
And then there's a certain mixing of ocean water and fresh water.
Well, you'd kind of like to not have the mixing. We've jerked most of the system around so that they end up having maybe more current than they should have. But you'd like to just get that tidal prism of marine water coming in underneath the freshwater, because it's significantly heavier. And you'd like to not mix it up too much. You'd like to kind of keep that prism in place. When you narrow the channel, build culverts, put in narrow bridge systems, then you start to really churn it up, and you can lose some of that prism. But the idea is to try to keep that tidal prism with as high integrity as you can, because some things live in the intermediate stages between fresh and salt, and then others are in the salt system. And others are in the freshwater system. So you really want the dynamics of that if you can get it. But it's most of the estuaries have been affected one way or another, either narrowing the entrance channel or, like I say, narrowing for bridges, filling in the banks. So we'll get more mixing than we want in estuary systems today.
In what ways have people impacted the Nequanicum over the years?
Well, for the most part, filling is in that system. There wasn't a lot of agricultural land, which is the event that is most common in estuaries because you got that low gradient and you can dike it off and build farmlands, ag lands. But for the most part, filling has been the channel right down through Seaside, pretty narrow, and has pit run on both sides of it. And so that's the main impact at this point, is just narrowing those channels. You want as much sort of tidal flats as you can get out of it. But in the tribs, the other tribs, Neawana and the Neocoxy, those systems are pretty good shape and lots of nice big floodplain. And then there's been some restoration activities that have improved. You know, tide gates have been removed and channels have been opened up. And so we're getting a lot more tidal regime into the system.
Isn't there some kind of restoration project in the south part of Seaside down by the ODOT headquarters?
Yeah, that whole Neawana system has kind of been a project that the North Coast Land Service has been working on, securing the land and then opening up the tide flats and then even the old mill pond system has been turned back into a tidal regime. So you get nice tidal run in to those mill pond systems, and that makes habitat. Always catch a lot of juvenile salmon moving in there to feed on that out-migration. The smolts go out. So there's been a lot of activity, but the main one has been really securing the land so that it can be managed for habitat.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing on the Columbia River estuary. I see we've got some different programs coming up to celebrate National Estuary Day. Well, you've got one here presented by Neil Main, Estuaries, Linking the Land to the Ocean. What kind of program is that going to be?
Well, the library is sponsoring and kind of public outreach inform people about their resource. And the main focus there is really to try to build a little bit of structure for people to think about estuaries, to kind of put together a little bit of an ecological toolkit so that there's a sense of how the system works rather than just knowing about the pieces, because it's the dynamics of all those pieces that makes it work. But we end up getting caught up on the fish or the clams or the, you know, individual parts of it. So it was a big focus on the dynamics, the interchange, and the values of the salt marshes, and the decay of the material that then becomes the energy source for the system, and it's trying to really build capacity of people. So if there are controversies, first of all, that value the resource, and then if there are issues, then people have some background to carry on a discussion. Otherwise, end up with just kind of a bit of a yelling match about their personal agenda.
In other words, you might run into a private property owner that's really not interested in the estuary.
You know, estuaries are a lot like sand dunes. People don't like to see them moving around.
Huh.
We get nervous about things that are moving. And so, you know, estuaries, you got runoffs from the watershed, and you got tidal regimes, you got stored surges, and so it makes folks nervous, in some cases for good reason, that they're going to get flooded, and that's affecting their personal property and or in some cases maybe just inconvenience them to get to work or get to the store because there's water across the road. So that's the part we try to help people understand a little bit more, that these are, you know, resources, and then we kind of learn to live with them. That's the price we pay for living in paradise here on the North Coast.
So you're going to do a half an hour program. Maybe you could amplify a little bit on some of the programs that you're going to talk about.
Well, the presentation at the library next Thursday night is, like I say, really kind of the academic side. That's what's an estuary, how's it work, and then some sort of intellectual tools to work with. We've been using an ecological model where you start out looking at the biggest picture possible, and then the language, you know, eventually you get down to, you know, communities and then populations and then individual organisms, and just trying to get a little bit of a framework to think about these dynamic systems, because they're really complex and they have a kind of dynamics that, you know, generates new products, so that every, you know, if you start out with just the bottom of the food chain with bacteria, you know, each one of those levels as it goes up, the organisms and communities and population, each one generates a product that makes the next level work. Science books call it emergent properties, but it's so important. You know, sort of a sample is, you know, and off and generally, when you looked at the individual elements, it doesn't give you a clue about what the product is. My example is kind of the cake. You know, if you study flour and you study eggs and you study baking powder and you studied the ingredients of a cake, none of those would tell you that there's going to be a cake. So, but then when you get the cake, you can't undo the pieces. So that's, you know, that's kind of the way our resource system works, is that, you know, that oxygen and hydrogen, they come together. You could study them forever and you would never predict water by studying those two gases. Put them together and you got water. So that's the way nature works, is these emergent properties are so fundamental. And even though we tend to focus on large, sexy megafauna type creatures, you know, you got to have those bacteria down there doing the homework or you get nothing.
I'd like to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and we're visiting with Neil Main, a scientist from Seaside area who's become really knowledgeable about the Neconicum River estuary. Appreciate you being here, Neil.
Well, we always are eager to spread the word about sort of the forgotten estuary, you know, with the Columbia River, second largest system in the nation. You know, Neconicum doesn't get on the chart much, but it's all those 19 estuaries on the Oregon coast are so important to the dynamics of the things we care about.
We talked about the physical characteristics of the estuary. I couldn't help but wonder, with the weather here and the great changes in flow rates, how does that affect the habitat? For example, in the winter when we get the big floods and stuff.
Well, that's part of the reason that, you know, we try to raise the respect for the estuary system, is that, you know, these are some of the most adapted organisms on the planet. I mean, you can imagine salt water one minute, fresh water the next, dry land for a while, then totally underwater, temperature changes 20, 30 degrees in one single wave, hot day in the summer with fresh water, and then all of a sudden marine water at 50 degrees. So, you know, it's really one of building respect for these incredibly unique systems. And, you know, the things that live in the sand, the clams and the ghost shrimp and the algae and the bacteria, all those things have got these huge adaptation spectrums that, yeah, if you're living on the land, you don't have to deal with. So big runoffs with lots of suspended sediments and all those, you know, these are, like I say, these are some of the most highly adapted creatures. And there are not many of them, as it turns out. And then we also think about them as, you know, really nurseries. over half of the nearshore marine fish come into the estuary to spawn. A lot of the
food. So it's not material. Just salmon.
It's not salmon. No, that's it's, in a way, it's been kind of a unfortunate thing that, you know, we got so preoccupied with salmon because this whole dynamic fish system, some 15 species of fish in the Nicanicum, of including salmon, of course. Mm-hmm. Not that we don't care about salmon. We care a lot about them because estuary is the transition zone for the salmon, and so we definitely care about them. We don't want to limit it to salmon.
Yeah, plus they're mighty tasty.
Absolutely.
What other species come in from the ocean?
Well, you know, we just had the big mass anchovy run in the Nicanicum that filled the banks with hundreds of thousands of fish, so many that they deoxygenated the water and
wow.
Went belly up, along with a whole lot of other things that died. But it's a kind of a normal event. But anchovy come in there and fill it up. We watch the osprey. They help us get an inventory of the fish because they, you know, so we see them bringing cotteds, staghorn sculpin, and trout, flounders, sort of the main diet, but and the little shiner perch, and then larger perch, red-tail perch, and there's four species of perch that marine perch that come in to spawn in the system. So it's really quite dynamic, and like I say, there's a danger of just kind of focusing on it. On the salmon. So
Now I see on Saturday you've got something called the Estuary Hike. It starts at 9 o'clock, and you'll meet at the north end of Franklin Street. Tell us a little bit about that program.
Well, that's just kind of the hands-on piece to get people out and looking at the estuary. It's one of the really neat ecosystems where you can see what a couple of inches of elevation does, because the marine plants are very, very restricted to a certain level of exposure or inundation by water. So in that spit there at the mouth of the Nicanicum, you get a look, you know, you can kind of walk through the history of the tidal regime by looking at the different plants, some which grow right down next to the near shore. And then a couple inches change in elevation, and you get a whole new species. Another 4 inches change, another species, and kind of stair step it up and start to see that, you know, it's not just like a bunch of grass out there. It's maybe a dozen species all connected to certain levels of tidal exposure and inundation. And then the system sorts it out. And paints a nice picture, but you have to be there, kind of see it, and get a good feel for it. So that's the goal there, is to give people some on the ground experience with their estuary.
So that would you do that at low tide?
We do. We've got it timed, so we got low tide at 8:47 that morning. We'll start at 9, and we won't see tide water for a couple hours there, and that kind of helps make the point that, you know, here comes the tide. It's going to cover over certain level. And, yeah, so it's a great sort of living learning system. And the more interface we can find that people can see how it works, I think the richer it makes their lives. That's pretty much our goal at this point. It's about quality of life. We're not trying to teach estuary science.
But at the western end of that estuary, the channel kind of wanders around there, and it's causing some concern about the long-term location of the sewage treatment plant. Bring me up to speed on what's going on there now.
Well, I don't know all the details other than that, you know, when my family got to Seaside in 1946 on Christmas Day, the Corps was putting an emergency dike to keep this wastewater treatment plant from being washed away. So 1946, it's kind of been an issue, and it's, you know, the channel moves to the south, then to the north. It's got about a 10-year wag of its tail out there, so it goes all the way to the south and goes all the way to the north. Like now, it's clear over in the Gerhardt side, half a mile away from the wastewater treatment plant, but it'll be back someday. That's just the way those estuaries work. They're always moving around, and unless you go out and beat them up pretty hard with big giant jetties, well, that's what they do.
What, why do they do that? I mean, it would seem like the estuary would form a channel, and that would be it. But you're telling me they form new channels and move around. What's the dynamic of that?
Well, you've got quite a few moving parts. You got currents that are moving north part of the year and south part of the year. Then you've got runoff, pretty high runoff some years, not so much other. Major events, and we're talking about sand. We're not talking about channels in the sense of channel probably doesn't apply there, just because really in 24 hours it can change because we're moving sand around. And granted, in the early 70s, there was a big sort of harebrained idea to put 200 houses out on the seaside side of the estuary. And so the developers got a mining permit to haul sand off the beach, and they built a big giant, put a big fill in out there. And that kind of messed up the system for quite a few years. And parts of it are still there. That little that island out in the middle is kind of what I think about as a flying new ointment. It kind of keeps that channel from moving the way it would like to. And so I think that's part of the problem. But they've done major riprapping on the wastewater treatment now to try to move the channel a little bit. So we'll see how that works.
And then also on Saturday, the 27th, we've got the estuary discovery program at Quatet Park from 10 to 3, sponsored by the Seaside Aquarium. Is that pretty much the same kind of program that you're doing the other parts of the week?
No, actually, that one's one where people really get involved. They can pull up the crab pots and look at crabs. They can test the water and kind of see that zonation that happens from the salinity with a high salinity on the bottom of the Neganicum and then fresh water laying on the top. And then we have all aquariums with the local fish in them, and we got underwater cameras. So it's a personal involvement program, get people thinking about a little more sense of ownership of their resources there in Seaside.
Yeah, that sounds like a great program. Again, that's Saturday the 27th from 10 to 3 at Quatet Park. Is that the park that's right downtown?
That's right downtown, yeah. People just stop by and check out whatever they're interested in. We'll have interpreters there from the aquarium. We still run the beach discovery program all summer, the same kind of thing where people interact with the beach and the sand and the ocean. But this is the estuary version of it.
Yeah, that sounds great. Now, if you were going to go, say, to Seaside High School and talk to the students about this environmental work, how would you describe it in such a way to grab their interest?
Well, you know, it's easy, given kind of our social structure, to miss the place where you live.
Right.
And so, you know, one of our strategies when we were working there with the programs was really what we call place-based education. That is, make the place the curriculum, and then use the knowledge base to understand your place, as opposed to what can happen sometimes, and that's just the knowledge base is delivered, regurgitated, and move on with no connection to sort of the real world or their place. So that's was part of the concept for starting these programs was, you know, if you don't know about your place, it'd be easy to think it's not very valuable.
Is that pretty well received, that approach? I mean, the kids nowadays, they, you know, spend most of their time looking at a screen of one sort or another. So getting them turned around so they're actually thinking about the real world, I suspect, would be kind of a challenge.
May well be. I've been out of the school teaching racket for a while. But honestly, I've never found too many kids that don't like to be doing something. And so that's something just needs to have a little bit of an adventure component to it and some personal connection. That is, why would it matter to me? And otherwise, I think you end up with, just regurgitating information, you know. It may not be a sense that it's really about my life and it's about my place and the place I live.
Now, so, how is your program received generally in the community? Do people actually get interested in it and start learning about it?
Well, we don't have any measuring, monitoring system.
No, just your overall feel.
Yeah, overall, I think, you know, when we have programs, the library, when the land trust does things, we fill them up. The hikes, the presentations in the winter, the listening to the land, all those are packed houses. So, you know, may not have been true in the past, but I think people are really kind of realizing just how connected their lives are to the land and want to be lightened a little bit. So,
yeah, I wonder what your take is on climate change and the resulting rise in sea level, which is actually occurring now. Are you seeing any evidence of that in the estuary?
We don't, but, you know, people have it in their planning agenda that, you know, these acquisitions of land to protect them is really with that kind of thought in mind that we're going to need it because it's going to be the buffer between where we are now with our formal cultural structures and that rising sea level. But obviously, you know, how much it rises, there's limits as to how much you can do to protect the resources and have that deal with a 2-foot rise.
Well, you were talking earlier about the impact of a rise of 2 inches, and all of a sudden we're talking 2 feet, so that would be a substantial impact, I would suspect.
And it would redesign a lot of the ecology and really, you know, I guess it's a wait and see in some cases.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, folks, we're out of time here at Coast Community Radio, and I've been fascinated talking with Neil Main, specifically about estuaries and science in general. And Neil, I appreciate you coming in and talking with us.
Thanks for giving us a chance to share with our community.
Yeah, and I'd urge folks to stick around and listen to Albert Smith and his always wonderful Friday Folk. Now, I think he has something special coming on his program today, does he not? Do you know anything about it? But at 11 o'clock, it's going to be special, so stick around. Talk to you next week.